This podcast is not legal advice and should not be relied upon as such. You should always obtain legal advice about your specific circumstances.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Hall & Wilcox's cyber podcast, CyberZone. I'm Eden Winnicker, a partner and head of cyber at Hall & Wilcox. We're excited to continue with season two of CyberZone. For episode two, I'm thrilled to be joined by James Morvell. James is a leading partner at Hall & Wilcox, specializing in, amongst other things, equity capital markets and corporate advice. James has experience advising public companies on how to respond to cyber attacks and whether they have an obligation to notify the stock market. Welcome, James.
Thanks, Eden. It's great to be here joining you today.
Excellent. The title for season two, episode two, is Cyber Attacks and Continuous Disclosure: When and What to Notify the Market. Now, before we get started, an article was published in the Australian Financial Review on the 20th of February, 2023, that stated that ASIC is now focusing on the issue of continuous disclosure in relation to cyber attacks. This came on the back of a study by University of Wollongong professor Alex Frino, who identified that over the past decade, only 11 of the 36 cyber attacks against ASX-listed entities was first reported to share market investors. Now, in my view, this is a really important topic that has not got enough attention. And so we're really pleased to have James here to share his knowledge and insights about this important issue. Now, let's jump into it. So my first question for you, James, is that not all listeners will have a detailed knowledge of continuous disclosure obligations. So I was hoping that you could provide us with an overview of what this law actually is and why is it in force?
Yeah, thanks, Eden. It's one of the more challenging legal requirements that certainly listed companies and listed schemes need to deal. In a nutshell, what it requires is that when the company becomes aware of information which is price sensitive, so information which may affect the price of shares or influence an investor to buy or sell, it must immediately announce that information to the market, provide a disclosure. However, like most of the laws we deal with, there are a number of exceptions to the general rule. And quite critically, some of those exceptions are that you don't need to make an announcement of price-sensitive information if you satisfy a few conditions. One, and most importantly, the information is confidential, so it's not widely known in the market or known in certain parts of the market, say through the media or among certain investors. Two, a reasonable person wouldn't expect you to disclose the information, which is always a challenging one to test, given that it requires the board to really sit in the shoes of that reasonable person. But then three, there are a few separate categories that you can identify. So one is where the information concerns a matter of supposition. Another is where it's an incomplete proposal. So you'll quite often have companies that rely on this exception where they're in negotiations for a transaction, but nothing has been signed in a binding nature. Or another one is where the information is for internal management purposes. And so companies almost at any given time will have various information that they know that whilst it's likely or it may be price sensitive, it's not announced to the market because they rely on these exceptions. And I think the final point I'd note on the rule is that why do you have exceptions to what sounds like a really sensible rule? If you know that something's price sensitive, why shouldn't you be required to always have to announce it immediately? Well, one of the reasons is that information is not always certain or it's developing. And so if information is released to the market prematurely and that the situation or the circumstances change or become more certain, so the information itself might become a little different, then you may have inadvertently created a false market. You may have put information out there that investors rely on to buy or sell. And as it turns out, in a matter of hours or in a matter of days, that information wasn't correct. So it's a really important rule. It's a really difficult rule to advise on because we can set up the parameters, we can provide examples, but quite often, every set of unique circumstances requires the board to determine whether this information is price sensitive and whether the exceptions apply.
James, thanks for that overview of the continuous disclosure obligations rules and why it's in force. Let's now bring it to cyber specifically. And my question there is that, if a listed company suspects or becomes aware that they are suffering a cyber attack, should they immediately seek legal advice? And if the answer is yes, why is that the case?
It's a great question. And I think the answer is yes. And that's not a lawyer just looking for more work out of a horrendous set of circumstances. But as I know, having worked with you, you know, in the context of cyber attacks, no one attack is the same as another, and no company is identical to another company. So what may unfold over, you know, as I said before, days or hours or weeks is unpredictable and is going to be unique to each company. But just as, you know, you'll be engaged and a range of other professionals from the very outset to identify what has happened, how has it happened, and what is the harm, it's critical that I think the legal advisors providing that corporate advice on what are your disclosure obligations are in the room from the outset. And my role in that, in terms of providing advice on continuous disclosure, runs in parallel with the other disclosure advice that will be necessary in the circumstances. So whether there are notifications required from a privacy law perspective, whether they're, you know, just related to Australia or whether they're international aspects of that. Because as I mentioned before, one of the really critical conditions for continuous disclosure is, even if it is reasonably expected that there's price-sensitive information, so a cyber attack that is quite serious, it might be that whilst the situation is developing and it's not expected there's any, you know, initial harm or value erosion on the company, and I've been in a scenario just like that, it's so critical to keep the information confidential, because as soon as it's no longer confidential, you have to announce it to the market. But then we see different strategies, Eden, and I think there's probably no perfect strategy, but that's where advice needs to be taken from the outset. You know, one strategy that we may advise in circumstances is, this looks really significant. This looks like it could have affected a number of people. If we look at the Medibank and Optus scenarios, the nature of the information that was likely obtained is both widespread and really critical to people. It's their personal information. It puts them at risk of identity theft and other fraudulent activity. So we may well advise that the company go into a trading hold. Trading hold being where, yeah, trading in that company's shares is suspended for a period, so no one can trade, and the ASX will grant the hold on the basis that the company will come out of it upon the announcement of certain information. So you won't tell the market when you go into hold what has happened. You say, we need to go into trading hold, but we will announce, you know, an update to circumstances within a maximum two-day period. So that's one strategy. But there are a number of other things, Eden, that you can do, but you need to be in the room from the outset.
That makes sense. I mean, can you talk about what's involved in a company going into a trading halt? What sort of, is there a criteria? Is it as simple as them writing to the market? When do you form the view that, all right, it is, you know, we need to advise a company to do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's not always necessary to do it. And yeah, I'll be honest, you always got to infuse commercial considerations with legal. You know, we don't provide advice or operate in a vacuum from the situation of a company. And yeah, it's fair to say that going into a trading is not something that a company would do lightly, because, you know, any suspension in the company's shares creates a market perception. And so the situation where you would do that, I think particularly in a large scale organization where the breach is likely to be very significant, if it's proven or if it's uncovered, you might need that 48-hour period to make proper inquiries to be able to actually announce to the market what has happened and what you expect the circumstances are. However, there might be scenarios, and again, Eden, you and I in more recent times have represented a company where something had happened, and one of our initial advisory steps was to consider putting an announcement to the market that we've become aware of a cyber attack against the company. At this point, no information has been obtained that there's been any significant loss of information or personal information or any significant interruption to business operations, but we will update the market as and when we know more. And there are a number of companies who have made an announcement such as that upon finding out that there's been a cyber attack. And trading continues. Companies then, within its rights, to request a trading halt if it finds out that, oh heavens, This is much worse than we are. And to your question, Eden, it's not a difficult step to take. The company writes to the market operator, in our case, ordinarily the ASX, and requests a trading halt because this information it knows that it needs to look into further. And the regulator will ordinarily grant that. Company goes into trading halt and comes out upon making an announcement, you know, within a couple of days.
That's really helpful context there, James. I mean, you mentioned Medibank, and I remember speaking with you about it at the time when the incident was first announced. And at first, it sort of looked as if Medibank were being really proactive and open in their communications, and sort of we were comparing and contrasting that approach to the one of Optus. But of course, what we know now is that, you know, on the 17th of October, Medibank said that in a public announcement that, you know, they could say definitively no customer information was impacted. And then fast forward to the 27th of October, trading halt, you know, ultimately the announcement that all customers are impacted by the incident. You know, I guess when we look at that, I really think, you know, what was known on the 17th to give them the confidence to make that statement. And it really, to me, is it demonstrates some of the challenges that a company faces when dealing with cyber attacks. Can you just give your view on that and what some of the challenges are early on when a company considers whether to or not to notify the market?
Yeah, I think it's a really good case study to look at. And how I'd probably answer it, Eden, is to look at other events that might occur in a company's life cycle that could cause it to make an announcement. So let's say, take the case of Medibank, overnight, one evening, one of its head offices, is flooded. There's a burst pipe, it floods the whole thing. They know it's affected computers, it's affected their data, et cetera, et cetera. It's much easier to ascertain in that scenario what the likely effect is. One, for one, you can see it. You can see what's happened. You can be in there. You can work out how many computers are affected. You know that if you've got backups in the cloud or wherever they are, they'll be maintained, and that the flood won't have made it to the backups. In a case of a cyber attack, and I've been maybe unfortunately involved in a couple where I've seen the situation develop, and I'll be interested in your perspective on this, Eden. What you know on day one can be quite different to day two and day three, let alone week two, where the experts are actually identifying which data has been taken. Perhaps it might be the criminal network is itself disclosing, whether it's on the dark web or wherever it chooses to do so, evidence of some of the information it has. And so I think that's one of the great challenges, that you don't know what you don't know early on. And I think it's not, I can understand how companies can have some level of confidence in the early days that they think they've identified the scope of the data breach. And yet as time develops and as further work is done to understand it, the situation becomes a lot worse. And so looking at even some of the requested or proposed reforms in this area, I think one analysis looking at the SEC situation in the US, where they've built into the legal requirements, in addition to just the general continuous disclosure test, I think there's now a requirement that if there's been a cyber attack, there has to be an announcement in respect of that situation within a period of time. I think it may be 4 days or thereabouts. The situation which we looked at Medibank is that there was an announcement. So they made the time requirement. They met that requirement. The problem was what they knew then, or what they thought they knew, changed over time. So I think that's where there isn't a perfect legal solution to this rule. We could, through the ASX listing rules and or the Corporations Act, include similar provisions, but it wouldn't necessarily change some of the challenges, because companies, I feel, could certainly meet that requirement to make an announcement within the period of time that's legislated. But the information they know may very much change over time. And even, working with you, that's sort of almost inevitable, isn't it, in many scenarios where, because the work can just take, even people working 24 hours a day, it can take time, can't it, to actually identify the scope of the breach, what's missing, what's being infiltrated.
It really can. One thing I often say to clients early on when we get called in to respond to an incident is, you know, expect the unexpected. Because as you say, the investigations can take time. You can have a big team running, you know, forensic analysis over systems. You know, sometimes it can take, you know, 1 to 2 weeks to really get a full grasp on, maybe even longer sometimes, a full grasp on exactly what systems have been impacted. And then you then have to then move to figuring out, well, what's actually on these impacted systems. So, you know, I've had some good news stories where a company who had quite a severe cyber attack and thought that they may have needed to notify, you know, 1 million individuals about a cyber attack. And that was the initial thinking when we got called in. You know, through doing a forensic investigation, we were able to figure out that the system that held that customer data was actually not impacted at all by the incident. And so therefore they didn't need to go and tell the 1 million people. It wasn't a public company in that particular instance, but that would have been sort of the type of thing that could have had a material impact on the value of the company. And therefore, if it was a public company, you know, it would have arguably required notification under the continuous disclosure rules. But we were able to, in sort of 2 weeks, figure out that no, these particular systems weren't impacted. On day one, we thought that they were. And we had a fairly strong view that they probably were. So it was, the company was obviously delighted to find out that particular systems weren't impacted. And I've seen the converse of that as well, unfortunately, many times too, where you get in and you think, all right, well, this does look to be fairly limited. And then as tools are deployed throughout the network by the forensic investigators, they are able to see that, well, we thought this was contained, but as the evidence shows, the threat actor did move laterally through the network and the system that we thought was not compromised actually does have some indicators of compromise on it. I mean, the criminals, particularly the sophisticated ones, are good at hiding their tracks. That's generally why they don't get picked up, you know, depending on which study you look at. The threat actors are often inside a network for days, weeks, and sometimes months before the attack becomes known. And so if you really think about it, the way that they're able to go undetected is through, you know, sophisticated techniques to avoid detection. And so, you know, to really figure out how widespread they are within a network, particularly for a large company, can be challenging, and it does require the work of experts. So, yeah, I mean, I think coming back to the Medibank example, you know, they went forward foot, let's tell the market that we've had this incident. You know, to me, it's a real lesson in the importance of getting that communication, getting that notification right, and really only saying what you're able to say at a time. So, you know, rather than say using the word definitively, about no customers being impacted. Yes. If the view was that at the time of the investigation, no impacted customers had been identified, then it would have, I think, been okay to say, you know, based on our current investigation, we have not yet identified evidence of customer data being impacted. And then this is the most important part of it. But please understand that our investigation is ongoing and we'll urgently let you know if anything changes. So, you know, that would have been, as far as I understand it, an accurate statement that, you know, would have ensured that, you know, if ultimately customer data was found, and it was, you know, the company putting out the statement would be able to say, well, look, we hadn't had any evidence at the time. The investigation's now revealed that it has. And so we've come and done the right thing to tell the market as soon as possible. So it was an unfortunate use of wording, but it really highlights the importance of getting the notifications right. And that's probably a perfect segue into what was going to be my next question and now is, which is, you know, when a company ultimately decides to notify the ASX, what is it required to include in that notice?
Yeah, that's often a challenge as well. There's no mandated information that's required in respect of some disclosures to the ASX. The listing rules themselves are quite clear on what information you need to provide around certain things. Maybe it was an issue of new shares or an issue of options or a transaction with a related party. It's fairly apparent what you need to tell the market. However, in situations like this, it's really up to the company to determine how much and what it needs to disclose. And it goes back to those principles we discussed, Eden, that you know, the company needs to be confident about the information it is disclosing. And so the points that you've made and the suggested language in an announcement around, you know, using language like at this time and making clear reference to ongoing investigations and providing a commitment to subsequently update the market if information changes or more information develops, they're the sorts of things you see. And maybe if I can take it then to what's really important in this case is often so after the fact, so what are the consequences? And continuous disclosure is a very, very difficult area for another reason, and that is that when a regulator or let's say a class action litigant gets interested in a continuous disclosure breach, they have the benefit of hindsight. They can see what's developed. They can see where the share price has gone. They can see what the final information was. But of course, you know, we're often assisting the directors, and the directors themselves are at that point in time where they can't predict the future, and yet they're having to determine what to announce to the market. So in one of our cases, Eden, that we worked on together, as you'll recall, one of our clients did not make market announcements around a cyber attack. It formed a view that the information wasn't required to be disclosed for a range of reasons, but one critical one was it didn't significantly or substantially affect business operations, and there was no evidence that personal information had been compromised to any material. And in that scenario, ASIC learned of the data breach through other sort of angles, as ASIC can do, and sent through one of its formal notices requisitioning information to understand why a continuous disclosure announcement had not been made along the journey of this data breach. And as we prepared responses with our client, Eden, you'll recall, and I think you had some direct conversations with ASIC, some of the critical information that ASIC wanted is, well, what was the board and what would the board and management doing through this period with regard to considering their disclosure obligations? So at the worst end, you'd have companies who didn't even give any regard to disclosure. So we're just in the trenches trying to work out what had happened, but it either deliberately or just maybe innocently omitted to even think about their continuous disclosure obligations. And that would cause great concern to ASIC and the ASX. At the other end of the spectrum is a client who is considering disclosure at all points along the journey. So at every single day, probably multiple times a day, as the situation is developing and more information is being identified, continuous disclosure is being considered at each point in time. A draft announcement has been prepared, ready to go. A request for a trading halt has been prepared and is ready to be issued. So the company is fully aware of its obligations and is doing everything it considers reasonably necessary to keep the market informed. And in our case, with our client explained to ASIC that journey that the board had been on with regard to its disclosure obligations and the basis that it had held beliefs that the information wasn't price sensitive. And in our case, quite thankfully, ASIC accepted that explanation and didn't pursue the matter any further. But it is clear, not just from that article you referred to, but even the more recent situation of GetSwift, which didn't concern a cyber breach, but has resulted in the most severe continuous disclosure penalties we've seen, particularly against individuals, and the situation where the court actually went above and beyond what ASIC had proposed as the penalties involved, that continuous disclosure and ASIC surveillance is not going away. And the Medibank and Optus scenarios have brought it to the fore even more. There's still, I think, far more water to go under the bridge with both of those in terms of potential class action claims. And so I think that's why when you're assembling your experts in respect of a data breach, you do need to have someone in the room who's assisting the board and management with disclosure.
Yeah, thanks for that answer, James. I think it's really, as you say, sort of clear as day that ASIC are focused on continuous disclosure for public companies when it comes to cyber attacks. And coming back to the study by Professor Freno of the University of Wollongong, you know, only 11 of the 36 cyber attacks against ASX listed entities that the professor's research identified was notified to the market. I think what we've learned from your answer is that not all cyber attacks against listed companies require notification to the market. And what companies really should be doing is seeking ongoing legal advice throughout the process, really turn their minds to it and make sure that they're acting reasonably by taking advice and considering the full picture. What I wanted to do is just turn to the consequences of when companies don't follow that sound advice that you've just provided. What happens if a company has a cyber attack that should be notified to the market, but they don't disclose it?
Well, there are really, you know, probably three main consequences, I would say. And so one is regulatory action for contravention of the continuous disclosure requirements. Whilst they are set out in the ASX listing rules, they are effectively mirrored in the Corporations Act. So it is a breach of legislation to fail to comply with your continuous disclosure obligations. And I think the GetSwift example is helpful for us to see what the consequences can be. There can be very, very substantial fines levied against both the company and its directors and potentially other officers, those who have been, you know, involved in the contravention. And for the individuals, they also face very, very long periods of disqualification from being, you know, directors of an Australian company. So that's played out in GetSwift, could just as easily be adopted as the consequences in a continuous disclosure contravention relating to a cyber event. But more than that, as we've seen through many reports in the media about class action lawyers looking very closely about the Medibank scenario, the Optus scenario, it is quite possible for a class action to be brought for a breach of continuous disclosure. And without going into a lot of detail here, and I'll concede that I'm not a litigator, but, you know, essentially a class action claim, and there have been many in Australian history for breach of continuous disclosure, will look at, you know, the effect on the share price, the point at which shareholders were able to buy and sell, and, you know, the effect on what they would say was an uninformed market. So the company had withheld information, and so it had, you know, a negative effect on buyers and sellers in the market. That is then translated into a loss that they've sustained because they weren't fully aware. Now, it's true to say that bringing a claim for a breach of continuous disclosure in that civil context can be difficult. There are a lot of different aspects that you need to satisfy legally, you know, causation, you know, proving that, you know, the failure to make an announcement or maybe an incorrect announcement did actually cause the share price to, you know, rise or fall in a certain way and therefore result in loss to investors. But in some respects, that's not been fully tested, you know, very often in Australia, because most class action claims that have any reasonable prospect are settled, and that comes at a cost, clearly. Often a very significant cost. So, yeah, to answer your question, the consequences are very severe. There's fines, there's, you know, the risk of litigation and the cost of engaging in that litigation and ultimately likely to have to settle it. And then there's very, very severe consequences for individuals involved.
From that answer, I mean, it just, you know, makes the really important point that companies who are ASX listed, who have a cyber attack, should be getting on the phone to James as quickly as possible, and or to us as a firm. And, you know, that's something that we look to do at Hall & Wilcox, is bring in subject matter experts to help out where help is needed. So, you know, we might get a call in from a company to handle the incident response and the privacy and the litigation aspect of it, which is what I do. But you know, James's number is saved in my phone, and if the company's ASX listed, one of the first questions I'd be asking, you know, would be getting James in to come and assist with some advice on that. And just sort of talking about class actions, I think sort of it'd be remiss of me not to mention the report that was published by the Attorney General on the 16th of February 2023, outlining some proposed changes to the Privacy Act. The sweeping reforms would give individuals a right to sue for breach of privacy. What we've seen with Medibank is two class actions filed, one with the OAIC, which is taking the sort of unusual but conventional approach to class actions in the privacy sector, and there haven't been very many, but that is deemed sort of the more conventional. And then what we're also seeing is the less conventional approach, where there's been a federal court action filed, and because there's no breach of privacy, the current allegation is breach of contract, breach of the Australian Consumer Law, and breach of the equitable doctrine of confidence. So that's what we all thought that the claim would be in the absence of a direct right for breach of privacy, but it's going to be particularly interesting to see how that plays out. I wanted to ask one last question and really appreciate your time, but I wanted to look at the other side of the coin when it comes to notifying the ASX. So the question we asked or that I asked was, what are the consequences if you don't notify? So the other side of the coin would be, what happens if a company discloses an attack to the ASX, but that attack will not have a material impact on the company's share price? Can the company or the board find themselves in trouble for sort of over-notifying about something that isn't going to have a material impact on the share price?
Look, it's a very interesting question, because I think ASX, together with ASIC in recent years, have been a bit concerned about some of the disclosure behaviour of listed companies when it's really something to do with, you know, almost advertising or marketing. So putting good news out there, which is maybe not really material, but it's seen as a way to, you know, promote the organisation. Now, I think that can be really clearly distinguished from this sort of scenario here. I think it'd be perhaps a stretch to say that putting an announcement out to say, look, we've had a cyber attack, and our systems are so robust and our backups are perfect, and we've ensured that no personal information was there, so there's nothing to worry about. I don't think any regulator would see that as a promotional announcement or promotional material. So no, I think it actually is a prudent step. And I think where we're getting to, when you look at the US, you look at ASIC's more recent pronouncements around disclosure, I think there'll be more than the 11 out of 35 or whatever the number has been historically. I think more companies will start making an announcement as soon as they learn there has been a cyber attack. Even if the outcome of their investigation is that there's no harm, there's no disruption to business activities, and they just play on, as long as, and the key thing is to continue to update the market. So it might be in that scenario, you put that holding announcement in that we've become aware of it, we're investigating. At this point, we don't think there's been any significant harm or loss. But then, as the investigation is completed, or that information becomes even more certain, that the market is informed of that fact. Just as the market should be informed of that, of any change in circumstances in the negative. So as they find that, well, in fact, the infiltration information is far broader than expected, or it's continuing, and now, you know, it's affected our system so much that we can't pay our staff, or we can't accept rent from tenants, or in any other way, our business is being interrupted to a material degree. So, no, I think we're getting to a point even where, even more so, it will be important to consider making an announcement at the outset. And the one challenging area, I think, which is going to develop as well, and it hasn't been as prevalent in perhaps the more high-profile cases, but we know it is a fact, is the prevalence of ransoms. And ransoms being paid, being funded by insurers, and how that information in itself will end up within sort of the disclosure paradigm. And I'm not quite sure where that's going to fall, but I think there's something in that, because we know that our federal government, for good reason, doesn't like the practice of paying a ransom, but yet we know, being in corporate Australia ourselves and talking to our clients and understanding the insurance position, that, you know, to get information back, having done some work on understanding the reliability of the particular threat actor and whether they are likely to release information or, you know, decryption, et cetera, upon the payment, you can understand the motivation in a corporate entity in Australia paying that ransom, particularly if they have insurance coverage. that's an interesting area. I don't know where we're going to get to with disclosure in that realm. I don't expect there'll be any specific, very, very direct disclosure obligation imposed around ransoms. But I think what's probably going to happen more is legislative activity around the issue of paying ransoms. Interesting, your thoughts on that. That's something that you see some further development without notice.
Yeah, we might have to do another podcast on that topic. It's such a fascinating discussion, one I've had many times in many contexts. There was some proposed legislation that was going to require companies with revenue of more than $10 million, requiring those companies to disclose ransom payments to the Australian Cyber Security Centre. That ultimately fell away. And there is mention of this issue in a discussion paper that was released on the 27th of February. So a very recent discussion paper released on really Australia's cybersecurity strategy for 2023 to 2030, asking a series of questions. Consultation for that is open until the 15th of April. But one of the very questions in that is, should Australia ban all ransom payments? Reasonable minds can differ on this. There is a reasonable argument to say, well, just ban them and it props up a criminal network. If you ban the payments, then it will stop Australia from being attacked. That is a reasonable view. There's also a reasonable view that banning the payments won't actually stop them. And what it will do is it will drive certain people underground, or sort of, you know, to deal in the black market. You are effectively criminalizing the victim who may have no alternative than to the ransom. And that ultimately, you know, the company should follow, sort of, in my view, you know, Section 180 of the Corporations Act. You know, a company should act with care and diligence in assessing whether to make the payment or not. But that ultimately, if the company acts prudently and forms a view that it must be done and it's in the best interest of the company to do it, and you can get insurance for it, for example, then why should it be illegal? Why, you know? And I think the most extreme example is the company who, to continue as a going concern, to actually continue to exist as a company, you know, that company needs to pay the ransom because it's completely unable to operate.
Yeah.
Can't pay its employees. You know, there are going to be circumstances where a company finds itself in this position where, you know, its survival will be based on whether it pays or not. And to basically say to a company, well, and if they've got the means to pay it, to say to a company, no, you're not allowed to do that. And yes, your company has to go under, and too bad to all the employees and their families who rely on that company. You know, too bad you can't do it. And if you do it, we might come and arrest you for doing that. To me, that does seem harsh. So I think it's sometimes portrayed as a bit of a black and white debate, but to me, there's plenty of grey. Yeah, I think it's just going to be something that we'll have to keep an eye on over coming years. I certainly have a high degree of interest in it. Looping back to the last point, what you're saying is that you think that Australia will go through, whether intentionally, whether it's regulated or otherwise, will sort of start following that more SEC model, where companies will come out on the front foot and, you know, put in a placeholder notification if they have an incident. That's a really interesting view, and maybe that's the prudent thing to do, and it will be particularly important to get the wording right of those announcements. So, you know, being careful not to overstate, you know, the severity of the incident, or to be really accurate in terms of what's known at a particular point in time. What we don't want to see is, you know, a company coming out, making an announcement, share price tanks a week later. Oh, actually, it was nothing. It was just, you know, a small incident that we were able to get on top of, you know, within an hour, and no impacted data, nothing. And all of a sudden, the share price has gone down 10%. So that sort of, it's just that balance. It's going to be a fascinating area to watch. You know, I look forward to helping companies who are in these positions with you navigate these challenging waters. But yeah, that's all we've got time for today. So James, thank you so much for joining and sharing your insights and experiences and expertise in this area. Thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. We trust that you found the information useful in today's episode. If you've got any questions for myself or James, please feel free to reach out to us, where you can get our details from the Hall & Wilcox website, hallandwilcox.com.au. Both myself and James also on LinkedIn. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, review, and follow our podcast. You can subscribe on our website to be notified of new episodes. Have a great day, everyone, and stay cyber safe.